Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 239 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us. We also recorded a bonus episode, an interview with former WBO super featherweight champ Jamel Herring, who just recently announced his comeback out of retirement. He's hoping to come back sometime in September, October of this year. He talked about a lot of stuff, who he signed with, what his tentative plan is, who he's looking out for. He talks about Spence Crawford, what his take is on that, Canelo Charlo. He weighed in on the Virgil Ortiz situation that just happened. So we talked about a lot of great things with Jamel Herring. He's a great interview, so go check that out. That should also be uploaded in parallel with this week's regular episodes of reviews and previews. But jumping right back into it, this past Saturday, the 8th of July, from the Ballroom Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City on Showtime, Jerron Ennis remains undefeated at 31-0 with the 10th round KO over Roman Villa, who takes the second professional loss of his career. This was for the IBF interim welterweight title of the world. We talked about this last week. Villa was the one who got the upset over, who did he get the upset over?
Rashidi Ellis.
Rashidi Ellis debut under the PBC banner after leaving Golden Boy. Roman Villa got the upset win in that fight. But Jerron Ennis, he's just a different level, right? What'd you think?
Possibly the best performance so far. Stylistically wise, it was a good matchup for him. And you could tell just a really good jab. The way that he just flows from orthodox to southpaw with such ease, to the point that you don't even realize he switched. Just an all-round great performance. And it's just kind of like upsetting that the fact that, you know, the belts are going to be tied up with Crawford and Spence. You know, they're probably going to fight at least twice, maybe three times, depending on how those first two go, which leaves kind of like Jerron Ennis just kind of like in the wilderness. And, you know, he's already 31-0, but he's hopefully going to keep himself busy. And on that performance, it was, I hope he's back out again soon, because it was a weekend full of fights, if you watched, you know, boxing and MMA and stuff like that. And it was a really, really, really good performance. And I'm just pleased he got the KO late on, just to kind of put that little cherry on the top.
And it's unfortunate too, because which we'll touch on in a few minutes or so, but another welterweight fight was supposed to happen in Texas on DAZN. Virgil Ortiz and Stanionis, which didn't end up happening because of Virgil Ortiz's, you know, a medical issue for the third consecutive time, which is very, very unfortunate, which we'll touch on in a second. So, you know, obviously a lot of people would have been dissecting both of their performances. Even Stanionis, because Stanionis is not like he didn't have a shot. He had a total shot in that fight. That was a really good matchup. But, you know, Ennis being one of the rising stars in the welterweight division. So Virgil Ortiz, Stanionis, all three of them, you know, all would have been talked about if everything went according to plan. But yeah, I agree with you. Ennis just really shows his level, man. He's, you know, if we talk about special fighters, like the specialty fighters, you know, like you can tell they just got that extra level that you could just tell just by the eye test. We talk about Shakur Stevenson having that. People have said about Terrence Crawford and stuff like that. I mean, does Ennis join that list as well?
I think so. I think he's got pretty much everything. Good entrance, comes in flashy in what he wears. But then he's also really flashy in the ring, you know, just the way that he goes about stuff, the way that he just breaks them down, the way that I think he realized early on, like, okay, I've got Villa, and he just stalked him around the ring. And you were just watching, you're like, okay, sooner or later, he's going to take him out. And when he jumped on him, and you could see that he kind of like had him hurt, that combination to get him out of there was just beautiful. Just really good to watch. He's just the all-around package, to be honest with you. I just hope that boxing, you know, politics doesn't stop him from, you know, really getting there, and he just has to stagnate and kind of just keep treading water, fighting people that we just don't really want him to fight. And it's unfortunate because we do want to see Crawford v. Spence. So you know what I mean? Like, we do want to see them face each other once, twice, maybe three times. And it's, I don't know, you kind of feel sorry now for Ennis because I want to see him also get a shot. But, you know, it's not WWE. We can't do triple threat match.
Yeah, that'd be nice, huh? That'd be, what an entertainment show that would be. Right. But I mean, like we touched on before, Ennis isn't technically promoted by Al Heyman, right? He has another promoter. That's why it's he really hasn't had the opportunity that everybody expects under that Showtime banner, right?
Yeah, I remember, I think he was friend of the show, Abraham Gonzalez came on and told us that nugget of information, if I remember correctly, yeah.
Right, so, you know, talk about how we talked about in Jamel Herring's interview earlier today, how Lennox Lewis says politics, right?
Yeah, so, that is true.
So, yeah, I mean, hopefully Ennis, like, you know, you got Spence Crawford happening in about 2 weeks at the end of the month. Spence has said as recently as, you know, the All Access show on Showtime that just aired that he plans on moving up to 154 after this fight, even though there's a rematch clause. So I think that's been the plan for a long time, at least for Showtime, that I think they realize, like, okay, Spence Crawford, especially when Crawford left Top Rank. But I think ideally if Crawford was still with Top Rank and that fight could not be made because of the different promoters, I think Spence probably would have fought Ennis. Do you think Spence would have fought Ennis in place of Crawford? If Crawford was still with Top Rank and that fight just wasn't able to be made because of the politics?
He should do, but because of kind of the round robin that PBC normally do, they normally kind of keep them away from each other until they kind of see that one's over the hill. And then they realize that, okay, we don't really want him to lose the belts to somebody outside of the PBC. So let's throw them in together and let's have Ennis take the belts off Spence. And I don't know if Spence is at that time in his career where he's over the hill. Probably not, right? You know, he's just about to fight someone like Crawford. So that's a good question. You know, where would he have gone if we didn't have Crawford?
Thurman,
yeah. Cody Crowley, because he just had that kind of quite a good performance victory over Josecito Lopez, because that's who I could see Ennis now fighting Cody Crowley next, just because there's nobody else really to face. And, you know, Cody Crowley beat a former world champion in Josecito Lopez, right?
Yeah. So I think it would have been Ennis or Thurman.
Yeah, you know? I mean, you look at Thurman's obviously, you know, supposed to be coming out now, right? Fighting Danny Garcia as well. Like, obviously, they're putting those two together, supposedly.
Right.
Yeah, I could see him just doing like a name recognition type thing, giving one of the older PBC fighters a good payday, you know, on kind of as they're going out the door, you know, since Spence is kind of still going up the hill. Or like you said, yeah, he maybe would have just been like, you know what, like, it's time to move up. I'm sick of balling myself down to 147. Let's go up to 154 and kind of let his body kind of breathe a bit, right?
Right. Yeah. Also, this past Saturday from the AT&T Center in San Antonio, Texas, on DAZN, like we just touched on, an event that was originally supposed to be headlined for the WBO secondary world title, or WBA secondary world title, excuse me, alphabet titles. Virgil Ortiz and Stanionis were supposed to go and fight for the third scheduled time. And unfortunately, and it really sounds like, We're just recording the same episode that we recorded when this first happened. But unfortunately, again, Virgil Ortiz had to pull out. Actually, no, let me rephrase that. Because he released a statement, or his dad, or somebody on his team released a statement that he didn't pull out, that the doctors and the commission said that he could not fight because of, I'm assuming, the weight cut. He did have in the prior two times when this fight was supposed to be made. How do you say rhabdo meiosis or something?
Yeah, rhabdomyosis, I think, some of that.
Right?
Yeah, I did a little bit of research on it today because obviously I knew it was going to come up on the podcast, obviously, and it kind of, by the looks of what I read, it depends on, like, how bad it is. You know, some people can have, like, chronic rhabdo where he could be here for his entire career, you know, and essentially he would have to fight at a weight that he's very comfortable at because, you know, if he jumped in and started trying to lose a lot of weight, it would just keep coming back time after time after time. So, you know, fingers crossed, that he doesn't have it as bad as that. And, you know, he's still able to box, because just imagine how disheartening that's going to be for somebody that's literally on the cusp of becoming a world champion and he has to retire due to having that.
I know, that's very unfortunate, because, you know, there's been reports, and, you know, there are always reports and sometimes they could be wrong or not, but there's been reports saying that Virgil Ortiz fainted and that he needed CPR or mouth to mouth or something in regards to that. And I mean, hopefully it's an inaccurate report, because you wouldn't want that to really have happened. But yeah, we recorded last week's episode just before the news broke a day or two later about Virgil Ortiz, this situation happening with Virgil Ortiz again for the third consecutive time. And I said last week, I said, you know what, like, what if he still has an issue? You know, like during fight week. And I said that whole weight cut thing, I just think that his body's just rejecting that weight cut to 147. And his body's been trying to tell him, like, hey, you can't go this low anymore. You need to go up. Like, this isn't right for us anymore. And that's why I think I chose Stanionis last week, because I thought, no, I think the after effects of the previous two times before this third time was just too much. And sure, you know, lo and behold, a day and a half later or 2 days later, you know, it happens again. Do you think that, I mean, we're speculating here, but who do you think made the, I mean, obviously it comes down to the fighter and his team, but like, why do you think that he still continued to go into this fight at this weight class, probably still having concerns that it could have happened again?
I would assume, obviously, you know, we're just speculating, like you say, that maybe he thought it had passed. I know that in a previous interview, they kind of put it down to like a long form of the coronavirus, and that he'd actually spent his last few camps where he'd made weight kind of out of breath. And that he'd actually been in the ring fighting at probably 60% of his actual ability. So maybe he thought that, you know, he was feeling good, he was feeling fine, and maybe he thought that it had passed, and that, you know, 147 was, you know, something that he could make. And I'm assuming that they probably went to some kind of specialist, right? I'm sure, you know, Virgil Ortiz is probably getting paid very well. He's on the cusp, has been, you know, a world champion. I would imagine he went to somebody, and maybe he just got a bad bit of information. And obviously the rhabdo that he has obviously is, needs to move up in weight, or, you know, let's just hope, keep our fingers crossed that, you know, that we'll see him back out, you know, again this year. And, he finds a way to beat it or work around it, and that we get to see him fight, because he's just a fucking all round good fighter, isn't he? You know, every time you see him in the ring, every time he steps up, he manages to get the KO. And, you know, he's just someone that all of us fans just love to see, love to watch. You know, so fingers crossed that, you know, him and his team manage to find something, and we get to see him in the ring when he's fit and healthy, and hopefully, you know, at some point before the end of this year.
I don't even think he should come back before the end of the year. I think he needs to be out for a good amount of time to really just focus on his body and you know, get as healthy as he can. You know, I would not want to see him before the end of the year, as much as, you know, the fan in me wants to see him before the end of the year, because he's a great fighter and he's on that cusp. I think he owes it to himself, most importantly, and to his team and to his promoter at Golden Boy, to really focus on himself and stay healthy and kind of relax, because it's one thing for it to happen once, and then maybe twice, which is already pushing it, you know, and when it's a third time, it's not some, you know, your body's telling you like, hey, I'm going to keep doing this and it's going to get worse. So I think he should not come back before the end of the year. And maybe a good, I don't know, at least maybe a good 8-9 months out of the ring, maybe more, max 1 year. But yeah, like I said, three times, you need to listen to your body and take an extended rest, because it's just too much. It is too much. And we don't want to see somebody in the fight game, you know, as much violence as there is. And, you know, it's the fight game. You never want to see anybody, you know, get taken out permanently from the fight game. So it's never a good sign. But with that news of Virgil Ortiz and Santiones being called off again, up and coming, I mean, I guess you call him contender or maybe prospect, Floyd Schofield, who was on our show a couple weeks ago in advance of his fight against Haskell Rhodes, was elevated to the main event on the San Antonio, Texas card on DAZN. Floyd Schofield remained undefeated with his 15th professional win, with a 10-round unanimous decision win by scores of 100-87 on all three judges' scorecards. What'd you think about Floyd Schofield's performance? Because he had a cut on his eye. He kind of had to go through some adversity, right?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good performance. I thought it was something that he needed, a little bit of a test, some rounds. And, geez, Rhodes has a chin. you know what I mean? Schofield was landing some bombs, and I'm pretty sure he thought he was going to get him out of there. Kind of disappointed he didn't get the KO. He did go for it. Rhodes
went for it, though.
Yeah, he had an unbelievable chin. It just looks better on the resume, doesn't it? You know, and obviously I really like Schofield and his dad after the time that we had the interview with him a couple of weeks back. Seemed like a really good team. Yeah, I mean, apart from that, good performance. Good to see him headlining, you know, last minute thing for him due to, like you said, about Ortiz having to fall out. And just an unbelievable performance from him in pretty much his backyard, right? San Antonio. So, onto bigger and better things. And I don't think he's that far away from a big name now.
He called out on our show as well, but even after the fight in the ring with Chris Mannix on DAZN, he was calling out, was it O'Hara Davis?
They just announced, though, that him and Rowley have just gone into purse bids today. The WBA announced that purse bids be like a week or two.
Right.
Because he's the mandatory for Rowley Romero, so he's going to have to wait for that. And obviously, on the show, he called out Keyshawn Davis as well.
Keyshawn Davis, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Keyshawn Davis. But to me, I understand they want that now and stuff like that. They have a little bit of beef going, but are both really, really good prospects. Do it later down the line, you know, when it's worth something. You know, why take, I don't know, $100,000 now when they can be looking at $1 million purse if, you know, one of them or both of them manage to pick up, you know, some type of title later down the line?
Yeah. No, I get it. I mean, I think you're right, though. I think this was good for Schofield to go through the adversity like that. He had the cut, I think it was right under his left eye, I believe. And like you said, he was throwing really hard shots and Rhodes was taking them, you know, and he was not stopped or anything. And I think Schofield, even though it wasn't counted a knockdown, I think he did suffer an unofficial knockdown. Right. But the referee said that it was a slip.
Mm.
But if you look at it, I think it probably could have been ruled a knockdown. But you know, the referee ruled it a slip, but either way, he did what he had to do, and he got the victory in the end. So I think within the next couple fights, you know, I think Golden Boy is really going to fast track him to try to put him in a significant fight. So because he looked good, man, he looked good, and you know, he got a great opportunity to headline in his home state of Texas. So it kind of worked out for him. And in the co-main event, which was also elevated as a result of Ortiz and Stanionis being called off, Joseph Jojo Diaz Jr., former world champion, gets a 10-round unanimous decision win over Jerry Perez by scores of 97-93 twice and 98-92. And Jojo's been on somewhat of a losing streak last couple fights or so. What'd you think about his performance and his unanimous decision win over 10 rounds against Jerry Perez?
I didn't think it was a good performance. And I'm comparing JoJo to JoJo on his previous performances before. I didn't think it was that good. I know he's had some troubles, you know, in, you know, outside of the ring and in the ring, I guess, you know, with the last couple of performances against Hester and, you know, Haney and stuff like that. And I know that he's, you know, trying to keep himself sober now and, you know, be a better person, you know, better father and stuff like that, which is great. So hopefully that, you know, getting back in the win column, getting back in the gym, he can kind of, you know, find himself a little bit more, because he is still young when you think about it, even though he's had, you know, close to, what is he, 38 fights. He is relatively young, so I think
he's. I don't even think he's 30 yet.
No, I don't think so. I think he's like 28, around there.
Yeah, 28, 29, yeah.
So I think it'd be good for him just to take a little bit of time, you know, kind of have a little bit of a rest, because he's been super busy, hasn't he, if you think about it, over the last year or two, and some of the names that he's been in with. And I think he deserves that. Just to go away, find himself, you know, come back and hopefully put in a better performance, because Jerry Perez is, he's not setting anything alight. And, you know, didn't he just go with a draw with, was it Adrian Corona, Ray Corona's son?
So, right.
Yeah, he got the W, which is the main thing, the scorecards, you know, 97, 93, 98, 92. So, you know, won pretty much nearly all of the rounds, but it wasn't a great performance from him, and I think he can do a lot better.
Then moving on to fight previews this upcoming Saturday, the 15th of July, from the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas, Nevada. On Showtime, Frank Martin, 17-0, goes up against Artem Haratunian. I can't say it. 12-0. A battle of undefeated. What do you think about this fight?
Well, Frank Martin, one of those guys that kind of came out of nowhere. Another great fire out of the Derek James's gym. You know, look at that gym must be on fire.
He's on fire down there, man. He's on fire.
You got the Charlo brothers, flipping Joshua, Ryan Garcia, Errol Spence, Frank Martin.
Like, and they fight in 100-degree heat in the gym. Like, it's just ridiculously hot. Ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, it's hot in any gym. It should be hot in any gym. But Texas is a different type of heat.
Yeah, no, exactly. But
I like Frank Martin, though. I think he's, you know, he's waiting for his moment to shine. Like, he's getting there, but he's, you know, he's kind of slowly getting there.
Yeah, I think this is a good fight for Frank Martin. I think it's a fight that he'll look good in, and I think he finishes off Martin towards the back end of the fight. I think somewhat like round 9, round 10. And then it'll be on to, you know, bigger and better things, I think, later down the line. I just don't think that Artem really punches heavy enough to kind of back up Martin. And I think that's something that's going to go against him. I think he'll taste the power early on, Frank Martin, realize there's not too much there. And I think he'll just walk him down. And by round 8, round 9, I think he'll get him out of there.
And in the co-main event, Elvis Rodriguez, 14-1-1, goes up against former world champ Victor Postol, 31-4. Postol, you may remember, he fought Crawford back in the day in Las Vegas, I remember. I was at that fight. Was it Las Vegas or was it StubHub in Carson in L.A.?
MGM Grand.
It was, right? Okay, it was Las Vegas. Postol's still going at it, man. You talk about seasoned veteran or veteran in general in the fight game. He definitely fits that mold. What do you think about this fight?
Now, this is a test for Elvis Rodriguez. Nobody apart from Gary Antoine Russell ever gets in. Well, Gary Antoine Russell's the only person to stop Postol. But before that, nobody had an easy job and an easy night's work against Postol. So if Postol is still, you know, got relatively enough left in the tank at the age of 35, this would be a good test for him. He's definitely like a gatekeeper, like somebody that you have to really go through to prove how good you are, because he's been in there with everybody. Jose Ramirez, Josh Taylor, Terence Crawford, Matisse, good old Hank Lundy. You know, all these guys have to get in there and get a test against Postol. So I think Elvis Rodriguez wins, but I think it's going to be a relatively close fight, and I think it may even go to the cards.
Oh, really? So you...
But I'm banking on Postol having something left in the tank.
See, I don't think he does. I'm assuming he's not being trained by Freddie Roach anymore, right?
Postal? That's a good question. I honestly don't know because he's been.
I wouldn't think so, but he was trained by Freddie Roach at the Wildcard Gym for years. In years, especially when he was world champ, and even after and before, he was trained by Freddie Roach.
And you got to think about it. Kenneth Sims Jr. beat Elvis Rodriguez. He's a slippery character, and I would say Postal's kind of slippery back in the day. So that's why I think he'll give Rodriguez a little bit of work, which will be good for him because obviously Elvis Rodriguez kind of started his career on, you know, just knockout after knockout after knockout after knockout. So it's going to be interesting fight if Postal has anything left for me, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I don't think he does, but you could be right. You never know. Sometimes they can pull it out, and we are surprised. Also, this upcoming weekend from Detroit, Michigan on DAZN, Alicia Bumgardner, 14-1, goes up against Christina Linartau.
Yep.
Linartau. I hope I said that right. 14-2. What do you think about this fight?
Should be a good fight. Big fan of watching Bumgarner, and this is a rematch. This is the only person so far, the only blot on Alicia Bumgarner's ledger is a split decision to Christina Lindartu back in 2018. So this is a little bit of revenge for Alicia, and I think she'll be able to do it. I think that she's come along a lot since then, you know, picked up the world titles. And what do they say? It gives you an extra 20%, an extra 30% in the tank. So I hope we do see that, and I hope then we get to see Bumgarner in some bigger fights later down the line.
And in his professional debut after being signed by, I believe, Matchroom Boxing and DAZN, Andy Cruz, I think he's a former Olympian from
Cuba,
right? From Cuba. Makes his debut against Juan Carlos Burgos, 35-7-3. This is for the vacant IBF International Lightweight title. You talk about making your debut against somebody with the experience as Burgos, 35-7-3. Is this kind of Lomachenko-esque?
So they say Andy Cruz, if you look at his amateur pedigree, it's unbelievable. Won pretty much everything, beat stars like Keyshawn Davis. And it's funny that they've put Andy Cruz in there with Juan Carlos Burgos, who fought Keyshawn Davis last year at Christmas time. And obviously that's the big fight that they're trying to look into a kind of position, I guess, you know, Andy Cruz against Keyshawn Davis later down the line. But like you just touched on, Burgos has been in there with Keyshawn Davis, Hector Tanahara, Devin Haney, Mikey Garcia, just to name a few. So it's going to be interesting to see how Andy Cruz converts into the pro ranks against somebody with that much experience. Like,
Juan, this is real. This is exactly a real like test. Now, I didn't want to say test. This is a fight because. Yeah, I mean, we never. It's hard to really see these types of fighters coming out of the Olympics or the amateur program coming straight into their first professional fight against somebody as experienced as this. And there hasn't been that many. I think the most recent example would it be Lomachenko within the last decade or so?
Someone to come into the pro ranks and kind of jump into such big fights that early. Yeah, you're looking at like a Lomachenko and Usyk. Probably Loma. Obviously, you can't just jump in straight into a world title fight because you need to get ranked. But like Andy Cruz is doing here, he's fighting for a vacant IBF international lightweight title just to get himself ranked. And then obviously you can jump up and hopefully try to fight. You know, you need to get into the top 15 normally to be able to fight for a world title. But money talks.
Yeah. I think this is probably the most intriguing fight of the weekend just because it's so much hype around his debut. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to see how he performs in his professional debut under DAZN and Matchroom Boxing. And also this upcoming weekend from the Virtu Motors Arena in Newcastle on DAZN, Josh Kelly, 13-1-1, goes up against Gabriel Alberto Corso, 18-0, undefeated. This is for the WBO International Super Welterweight title. What do you think about this fight?
Interesting fight, obviously, you know, with Josh Kelly, you know, moving up in weight after campaigning originally, you know, back down at, you know, welterweight, then moving up to 154 now. I think this is his second fight or third fight at 154. So it's gonna be interesting. You know, Corso comes in undefeated, trying to position himself, obviously, for the WBO, like you touched on. Interesting to see that they pick somebody that doesn't really bang. Corso has 18 wins, but only 3 KOs. You know, Josh Kelly is somebody himself who kind of lacks a little bit of power. So, you know, very clever matchmaking in terms of picking someone that's undefeated, but, you know, don't speak about the knockouts to kind of hide that. So I think we'll see Josh Kelly come out victorious. You know, he's in his back garden. Obviously, Newcastle being from the north, he's from the northeast of England. So I think he'll come out victorious and hopefully he moves on because we went out drinking with him in Arizona.
Yeah. In Arizona, you know, we did, yeah.
Super cool guy. You know, I hope he does really well. It actually has like a very flashy style. And I remember saying at the time when he was coming up that when he fought in Arizona, he struggled with his opponent. He has Amir Khan syndrome. As soon as he gets hit, he thinks he's a banger, doesn't stick to what he's good at and just stands in the pocket and he doesn't have the power. Kind of like Khan. Right. If they could just kind of get away from that and realize like, hey, stand and box, super quick hands, super quick feet. But they don't, you know, they have that warrior instinct, I guess, and they don't stick to the game plan.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's a blessing and a curse, depending on how the fight turns out.
Right.
News and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Former heavyweight champion Anthony Joshua will meet Dillian White in a rematch on August 12th at the O2 in London. The fight will be broadcast on DAZN pay-per-view in the UK. And will be available to DAZN subscribers in the U.S. So it's not a pay-per-view over here in the United States, but it's a pay-per-view in the U.K. I believe it's, what, £26? £26.95 or something like that? I think I saw something like that in the U.K. Are we really surprised that we're getting this fight? What do you think?
Yes and no. I think when you look at it and they have that 40, 50, 60 million payday of Deontay Wilder at the end of the year. You know, I'm sure if you're like one of his managers or you're part of his team, you're like, what the hell are you doing? You're going to fight Dillian White for, I don't know, 10, 20 million because it's not at a stadium. You know, they'd already booked the O2 Arena, which holds like 20,000, I believe. You're like, you're really going to risk that? Because obviously they're all getting a slice of the pie. You know, that's your slice that you're not going to get, you know, if he comes unstuck to somebody like, you know, Dillian White. But in terms of being a fan, in terms of being someone who's British, good fight. You know, it's probably come a little bit too late because I think the first fight was 7-8 years ago. And, you know, back in the day, there was a lot of anger between them. You know, they, you know, represented different areas of London, stuff like that. You know, they nearly started fighting during the break, if you remember, everyone. You know, he swung for him and then both corners came in and, you kept thinking like, shit, are they going to call the fight off? But, you know, they managed to calm everyone down and then the fight carried on. You know, the press conference this week, yesterday, was actually kind of timid. I thought it'd be more arguing and more insults and stuff. It was more Dillian White kind of arguing with Eddie Hearn. You know, AJ was kind of just sat there. So I kind of do hope they get a little bit of spite, maybe closer to the time, you know, when both guys are, you know, the stakes are a little bit higher and, you know, they kind of get that adrenaline going because it's nearly fight night. I hope that we do see that. But it sold out in the first couple of hours. You know, all 20,000 tickets went on opening day of sales. So you can just...
What a demand, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's not really going to rock the boat over here. But in terms of a good British fight, it's probably going to do good numbers, I think.
Right. And then another heavyweight news. I don't want to say I'm even surprised here. Lineal heavyweight champion and WBC heavyweight champion of the world, Tyson Fury, is finally returning to the ring, but against former UFC heavyweight champion, who now is officially with the PFL, Francis Ngannou. Both will fight on October 28th in Saudi Arabia. The announcement clarified that the fight will take place in a regulation boxing ring under boxing rules, including three judges using a 10-point system. So pretty standard stuff for a boxing match. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. And then I think the biggest thing right now is that WBC already said that they're not going to strip Tyson Fury. They're giving him some. I mean, people get so surprised all the time every time something like this happens, and that the sanctioning body won't strip them. I mean, it's like we talked about before, money talks. I mean, when you're a fighter who's making a lot of money, and the sanctioning body is going to, like, when they get their cut out of your purse every time you fight, they know, like, hey, it's better to just wait for him to just fight again when he fights for our belt, because the money we're going to make off of that cut is huge. It's a business. It's a business. Not saying that it's right. He should be stripped. He should. But, you know, it is what it is. But just imagine the money that they're getting paid over there in Saudi Arabia. It's going to be ridiculous. It's going to be ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. It's intriguing, though. The heavyweight champion of the world in UFC. Tyson Fury, the heavyweight champion of the world in boxing. It's unfortunate it's in Saudi Arabia. But imagine this fight in Vegas at the T-Mobile Arena. Would have been huge. Would have been huge. And it probably would have been more UFC fans there.
The problem is that the rumor is that there's, like, unofficially, they've been told no knockdowns. Like, it's just going to be a stand-up sparring match. And we're not going to see Tyson Fury turn it on and actually just knock him out. It's going to be kind of like Mayweather and McGregor. Mayweather carried him until the 10th and was like, okay, time to turn it on. Turned it on for that one round, knocked him out.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it's going to be 10 rounds of Tyson just kind of punching him and probably wins every round. You know, maybe covers in the corner, does that usual thing where he kind of does that Muhammad Ali, you know, looks, you know, lets Ngannou unleash a few on him. And then, you know, just a high-paid sparring match. Unless Tyson goes in there and just absolutely mops him, it's a complete waste of freaking time.
I mean, for Ngannou, this is exactly what he wanted. This is exactly what he wanted. This is why he got out of his UFC contract and didn't resign, because he wanted a boxing fight with a Tyson Fury, a Deontay Wilder. He wanted a fight of that because he knew the payday, like McGregor got with Mayweather, was huge. Was huge. He got exactly what he wanted.
I'm intrigued to see what it does, because from the pictures and stuff that we've seen on the internet recently, the Jake Paul Nate Diaz fight isn't selling at all. Like, has it got to the point where we're sick of him? You know, has it got to the point where even this being two heavyweights, which probably should sell, is this not going to do numbers? Because we've seen it. We've seen it so many times now.
Jake Paul needs to fight in LA. I know nobody wants to fight in California and stuff like New York because of the state income tax, but Jake Paul needs to fight in LA. Like, I feel like the crowd, because it's LA and Jake Paul's entertainment, they'll show out for him here. Maybe even New York, but Texas, it's not working in Texas. It's just not. And then the Jake Paul effect, like you said, it's losing its luster. So, you know, I don't know. But yeah, like you said, I'm not surprised about this Ngannou Fury. I'm really not. You know, I mean, hopefully after the Joshua Dillian White fight, we get maybe an AJ Wilder fight before the end of the year, maybe in the first quarter of next year. But that's the one I'm really hoping for, Wilder Joshua.
You think, what do you think, $100 pay-per-view for the U.S., this?
Fury Ngannou?
How they're going to make the money back, like you just touched on. Like, what do you think it's going to be? I don't think.
I don't think they care about the money when Saudi Arabia and the Middle East is involved.
True.
Yeah, because the Saudi Arabia puts up money. They put up money, and they also pay the promoters. So, yeah, I don't really think they care about the performance, because that's why these fights go to the Middle East, because the government over there, Saudi Arabia and all the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, they put up the money. That's what it is. So, yeah, it is what it is. And also, boxing scene has learned that William Zapata, the unbeaten lightweight contender of Golden Boy Promotions, will face the Philippines' Mercito Gesta, who's been with Golden Boy Promotions for a long time now, on September 9th on a DAZN card. It does not have a location yet. Golden Boy Promotions did not confirm this yet, but this is a report by Boxing.com. I actually like this fight. Hesta came out and he beat Jojo Diaz. So he's got some steam going. Zepeda is obviously probably the most well-rounded lightweight contender that Golden Boy has right now. He's probably the top guy and for them in that division.
They both beat Jojo Diaz.
What?
They've both beaten Jojo Diaz.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah, Zepeda just beat Jojo. Hesta beat Jojo as well. Hesta's been in the ring with Linares, Jorge Linares, former world champ. Even though he lost, he put on a good account on himself. I like this fight, man. I like this fight. I've always been a fan of Mercito Hesta. I think this is a really good fight, especially for the hardcore boxing fan base. What do you think?
I think Zepeda absolutely batters him.
Really? I think Hesta's got that dog in him, man. I think he could fight.
But I thought Jojo would beat Hesta, so...
Yeah, exactly. That's why you should reconsider your position here. I mean, I like this fight, man.
The output of Zepeda, I think he's just going to be too high for someone like Hesta, I believe. Hesta's going to be too small, too weak to, I think, keep Zepeda off him, and I think Zepeda stops him.
Oh, wow. You went for the stoppage, huh?
Yeah.
Well, as we get closer to that, and hopefully when we have an official announcement, we'll talk more about it. But I'm a fan of this fight. My Golden Boy, man, you got to give it to them. Regardless of all the criticism they get or anything, they put some good matchups on. So got to give them a ton of credit for that. Once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode of The Last Round. As I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, we have a bonus episode that's uploaded in parallel with this episode where we interviewed Jamel Herring as he announced his return to the ring since announcing his retirement in May of 2022. He's looking to come back in September, October. He talks about a lot of different things. He gives his take on Canelo Charlo, Spence Crawford, the monster in a way against Stephen Fulton. And then he talks about who he's signed with for his comeback and what his plan is, how that affects his top rank relationship and all that. So a lot of good stuff with the former WBO world champ Jamel Herring. But once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode of The Last Round Podcast. And as we sign off for this week, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to join us next week. We'll be reviewing the big George Kambosos is back against Maxi Hughes from the UK. Also on that card, Keyshawn Davis, Giovanni Santillan, and Jeremiah Milton.
Good matchups. But Milton and Giovanni Santillan have been on our show before. So maybe we can get some interviews with them again. So for my co-host, Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.